You're listening to WPEA 90.5 FM Exeter, and welcome back to our fourth episode of Defying Infinity. We're really excited for this one, despite the fact we don't have a guest. And today we are going to be, actually, first I should introduce myself. I gotta get used to that. I'm Brea, I'm one of your co-hosts of Defying Infinity.
Hi, what's up? I'm Mayhol. I'm another co-host.
And today we're going to look into a very interesting topic that is surprisingly not very looked into, and it's actually something that sort of like touches a lot of aspects of our lives and you don't even notice. So today we are going to be discussing biomimicry, and as always we're going to start off with a little true or false game. But quickly before we do that, I just wanted to give like a brief definition. This is a Wikipedia definition, but a definition regardless of what exactly biomimicry is. And it specifically says, biomimicry is the emulation of the models, systems, and elements of nature for the purpose of solving complex human problems. So by doing this true or false game, we're going to dig more, a little bit more into what exactly biomimicry's purpose is a bit deeper. So Mayhal, would you like to give us the prompts?
Oh yeah, sure. Okay. So here's the first true or false. Let's see. Biomimicry helped create swimsuits resulting in 100% of all medal wins on year. 100% of all medal wins on year in the Olympics.
What do you think, Mayhal?
I don't know. I think it's true because like there's this like story about like the shark skin inspired swimsuits where they basically like they were like looking at sharks and they were like, these sharks seem to swim really well because that's what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And essentially they made swimsuits inspired by that to reduce drag and like increase the speed of swimmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this actually is true. This happened in the 2008 Olympics, specifically for swimming. And you know, I'm not much of like a swimming connoisseur, but I'm pretty sure that was the time for like Team USA's like historic swimming run, which I think resulted in some controversy because that year was very dominant for the US, especially for the utilization of shark-esque swimsuits. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure if it's still allowed to like use that type of swimsuit in competition, but it was stuff like that really increased speeds and also like decreased levels of competition in the Olympics, especially.
I mean, it probably is allowed because I think they have like swimsuits that like morph to the swimmers' bodies now, and like a bunch of other like really cool technology. So I don't think shark skin is exactly competitive anymore. Alright, anyways, next true or false. Biomimicry simply involves copying the appearance of natural objects.
What do you think, Mayhal?
What do you think, Rhea?
I would personally say that based on the definition that we learned about, that would sort of be false because a lot of the time for like shark swimsuits, like sure, like we're emulating like the appearance of shark skin in the swimsuit, but it's mainly about like the physiological aspects of like what exactly the shark skin can give to a swimmer. And false is the correct answer. And it's primarily because biomimicry is not only trying to like emulate phenotypical aspects of like any sort of part that you're trying to emulate, it's supposed to mimic the functions. And I think that's really important to the definition.
Yeah. All right, next true or false. Biomimicry is only about mimicking species. And you actually kind of answered this in your previous answer, but
would you like to elaborate?
Yeah, so it is also false because biomimicry can emulate anything involved, not only ranging from like species, but also like cellular structures or ecosystems. Really, it's just like looking at the world around us and like kind of taking that into account for our benefit. Mm-hmm. And here is the last true or false, which I find like really interesting actually, but true or false, dung beetles have been researched to help in fog harvest Was that supposed to say frog?
No, it says fog.
Okay.
Brown male.
Fog harvesting because of biomimicry concepts.
Yeah, so this is actually true. And it was actually very interesting when I was first researching it. Essentially, dung beetles, they have, like, these, like, vesicle, like, they're not tiny vesicles, like, in the cells. They're, like, vesicles made of, like, tissues that can, like, hold large amounts of water. And they can also, like, absorb large quantities of water, which I thought was very interesting. Especially since, we're going to talk more about this later, especially with biomimicry. But a lot of the time, this can also help with, like, people who are in, like, a less well-off economic situation. And I thought that, you know, when I was thinking about this, like, this might help with, like, problems of, like, drought or desertification, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, and on that topic, like, what do you think, like, how does biomimicry help us? Like, why should we rely on it?
I think that, I think first before... I personally don't think I can, like, say much on this. I just can't say it in the right words. So I think one thing that we need to go more a little bit into is, like, how exactly the concept originated in the first place. So essentially, biomimicry has sort of been a concept for a long time, but it hadn't necessarily been established until, like, the 1990s, specifically by the mother of biomimicry, as we call her now, Jeanine Benyus. I'm sorry if I butchered her name, but she popularized the concept of biomimicry, and I actually thought one of her TED Talks, like, really clearly explained how it worked. Do you want to go more into, like, the biomimicry hypothesis?
Yeah, so she actually created what, as you mentioned, the biomimicry hypothesis, that claims nature, through billions of years of evolution, has the ability to provide humankind with optimal solutions to environmental conditions. So essentially, like, what that means is, like, nature has evolved to help us. And she also noted, like, in her books and speeches, that biomimicry can help in endorsing energy-efficient and sustainable methods of technology.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I think sort of adding on to the point of, like, evolution, I think one of the things that she especially highlights in the TED Talk that I will be sharing clips to is that, you know, like, species have been going through 8 billion years of evolution, which sort of, like, gives them a massive advantage because they've spent so long, like, developing to, like, different environmental factors and getting more adept at it as time moves on. So I wanted to share some videos of how she specifically explains it, and maybe you guys can get a better grasp of how exactly it works. So I'll pull up some videos. Okay.
Reveal anything that is hidden from us, at least in modern cultures. It would be to reveal something that we've forgotten, that we used to know as well as we knew our own names. And that is that we live in a competent universe, that we are part of a brilliant planet, and that we are surrounded by genius. Biomimicry is a new discipline that tries to learn from those geniuses and take advice from them, design advice.
That was one clip. And here's the second clip.
That we're not the first ones to build. You know, we're not the first ones to process cellulose. We're not the first ones to make paper. We're not the first ones to try to optimize packing space or to waterproof or to try to heat and cool a structure. We're not the first ones to build houses for our young. What's happening now in this field called biomimicry is that people are beginning to remember that organisms, other organisms, the rest of the natural world, are doing things very similar to what we need to do. But in fact, they're doing them in a way that have allowed them to live gracefully on this planet for billions of years. So focusing on function, what I'd like to do is show you a few of the things that they're learning. They have asked themselves, what if every time I started to invent something, I asked how would nature solve this? And here's what they're learning. This is an amazing picture from a Czech photographer named Jack Headley. This is a story about an engineer at JR West. They're the people who make the bullet train. It was called the bullet train because it was rounded in front, but every time it went into a tunnel, it would build up a pressure wave, and then it would create like a sonic boom when it exited. So the engineer's boss said, find a way to quiet this train. He happened to be a birder. He went to the equivalent of an Audubon Society meeting, and he studied, there was a film about kingfishers, and he thought to himself, they go from one density of medium, the air, into another density of medium, water, without a splash. Look at this picture, without a splash, so that they can see the fish. And he thought, what if we do this? Quieted the train, made it go 10% faster on 15% less electricity. That we're not...
Yeah, so those were the two clips. Mainly to summarize, I thought the way she described it, almost like plucking like different ideas from like other aspects of nature, she's almost like trying to use biomimicry to remind us that like we don't need to have like other humans even like inspire us. We can have literally any sort of organism or any sort of ecological system inspire us, and that can generate solutions for humankind. So now that we've gone more into that, we're gonna get a little bit more into the other aspects later, and we're gonna quickly take a break now. You're listening to WPEA 90.5 FM, Exeter.
Okay. And we are back. You are listening to WPEA 90.5 FM, Exeter. Rhea, if you wanna pick up where we left off.
Previously, we were just discussing a little bit about our queen, the mother of biomimicry, and we were mainly talking about what her philosophies on how exactly biomimicry could help us exactly were. So now, I was hoping we could get a little bit more into some other specific examples of biomimicry. Mehal, do you think you could tell us a bit about that?
Yes. So... So one example of biomimicry, which is really popular, is Da Vinci and his ways to create like flight for humans. So essentially what happened is that like Da Vinci, like as he does with most of his inventions, he was just like looking outside and he was like, wow, I see these birds and they're flying. I wonder if humans can do that too. So he started observing birds in flight, like sketching detailed diagrams of their wings, muscles, bones, etc., and like how they like adjusted their angle and curvature to generate lift, control their movements, all this like physics stuff. And inspired by this, like the way that birds naturally fly, he kind of designed a series of like flying machines, including the ornithopter, which is like a device with flapping wings meant to mimic bird flight. And like, I don't think he ever like actually made those inventions. It was more of just like a blueprint, but yeah. And then there's also the example of, I'm probably going to butcher this name, but George de Maistre. He's a Swiss engineer who made Velcro. And the story behind that is like, he went for a hike with his dog and returned home to find that like, the burrs, they're like little seed pods on the burdock plants, they're like bushes essentially, had like latched onto his clothes and his dog's fur. So he looked at one under a microscope and he was like, oh wow, these are all covered in like really tiny hooks that grab on to loops in fabric and fur. And this like inspired him to develop a new kind of fastener, which is Velcro, a combination of velvet and crochet. And it's just a hook and loop system. Velcro is actually the brand, which I only found out like yesterday. So, yeah. And that's also why, like, I'm not sure if you guys have seen this, but there's this like climber on, I think, Instagram, who puts like cactus spines into his hands so that he can grip onto walls better.
Oh, wow.
And it is a little bit gory, but it's also technically an example of biomimicry. So I found that really interesting.
Yeah, and going more into like specific examples of like modern biomimicry, I suppose there was one thing that I found online about like firefly inspired LEDs. So it was like utilizing like cellular processes of how like fireflies generate light, and then also applying the same thing to LEDs. That's one cool example. And again, shark skin swimsuits. And then this was another thing, but there was the utilization of DNA and like reordering it to look like the Mona Lisa when you were like examining it through a microscope.
Oh wait, that's so cool.
Yeah, that's not something that's like supposed to like help society or anything like that, but I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah. And Rhea, do you have like, how can biomimicry help us like as students? Or like, I think I can like elaborate more on that actually, but to start us off, so like one thing that I kind of took note of is that squirrels like you bury nuts in like their different trees, right? And there's like this memorization method where essentially you like take your notes and you like basically put them in different locations and then like walk around and like while remembering your notes. And apparently that's like one of the most effective forms of memorization, because like when the actual like test or whatever you need to be memorizing for like comes around, you can literally just take a tour of the place you put your notes in. And apparently it's like what a lot of people use when they have to like memorize like digits of pi or like entire textbooks in like one day. So yeah. Is there anything you can say about that?
I can't recall like any like specific examples now, but I would say that from like a general perspective, like simply knowing about biomimicry, it can inspire students to like think outside of the box, whether it's for like a school project or, you know, like some sort of passion project that they want to pursue. Like having the idea of biomimicry in their minds, it's, as we've been discussing before, it's like taking examples from, you know, like all these different like organisms and ecosystems, and it's sort of like using them to recreate something different, which I thought, you know, it was sort of different for me because I never really thought that could be possible. So I think it can, in a way, sort of be inspiring to students to think about it from that perspective.
Yeah, and like on the topic of like, you mentioned group or school projects, there's like, although like group projects are really looked down upon, like because usually there's like only one person doing all the work, if they are done right, like it's kind of like ant colonies, which is something like another comparison I noticed. I'm not really sure if this is biomimicry necessarily, but the way ant colonies like solve complex problems by like breaking big tasks among themselves, like group projects or like group study sessions, like if you're all taking the same class and all working towards one singular goal, it's a lot easier to split up the work between many people. And especially when like the work is specialized to the person, it's a lot more efficient than just like all six people individually doing the work. Mm. So yeah, that's another comparison I noticed. Mm. Although like another thing I read about is like there was controversy about biomimicry. So like, what are the potential problems that biomimicry can cause?
So actually, when I started to look at this a little bit more, I was very interested to see that like there wasn't much that actually like had like controversy pertaining to biomimicry. There was some like nuances, but I thought it was weird how there wasn't really anything that's wrong. And then that sort of made me ask the question, like, if there aren't any problems with the concept of biomimicry, then why do problems still emerge with inventions involving biomimicry? Like, obviously, we still have plane crashes, you know, like, swimmers always don't win their races. So, one thing that I was wondering is, like, what were your thoughts on that?
Wait, so what was the question?
Like, if the concept of biomimicry hasn't been judged much, or it's not very controversial, then why do problems still emerge with inventions that are inspired with, like, biomimicry?
I mean, I think the main problem here is, like, they don't really realize, like, it's biomimicry, so it's, like, not publicized that way, if you get what I mean. But, like, these inventions get publicized because, like, they might provide someone with an unfair advantage if it's, like, a competition, or, like, that is mainly where it is used. Because if you think about it, like, the shark skin swimsuits, like, apparently they were, like you said, I don't think they're allowed in the Olympics because they provide people with an unfair advantage. And like that, a lot of other cases of biomimicry are, like, usually looked down upon because they're, like, different from what's the norm, and, like, they might be helping, but it's still, like, not exactly fair to the other people who don't have access to that. So yeah, that's the only thing I can think of right now. But
yeah, I also felt that, like, going back to, like, the airplane example, there are still, like, tons of, like, just, like, problems that happen by chance, or, like, problems that we don't really have control of, like, external factors that can still, you know, like, affect inventions. Like, despite the fact, like, how good, like, you know, an airplane system might be, or, like, a train system might be, like, what our mother of biomimicry was discussing, like, there are still other factors that can still, you know, really debilitate, you know, a good invention. That's the same thing with, like, genetic mutations, too. Like, it's not, they're just random. Like, they just happen. It's simple like that. And I think it's, like, that about, like, nature's, like, intricacies and, you know, its beauty that can also apply to, you know, man-made inventions when they're inspired by biomimicry.
Yeah, I mean, like, I will say we are, like, focusing a lot on the negative aspect of biomimicry.
Yeah.
So how could this help in the future? Like, because I know that, like, it's been becoming more of a popular thing in, like, science and technology, and apparently also, like, social aspects. And it can also help with, like, sustainability, and which in turn can help us make advancements on creating economic stability. So do you have, like, any insight on that, Rhea?
Yeah, so I did some digging, and I found there was an article made, like, a little close to a year ago by Nature, and it was specifically talking about how the use of biomimicry in research can lead to helping, like, the United Nations, specifically, like, their goals for, like, sustainable development, and more specifically, the environmental, quote-unquote, environmental, social, and governance ESG framework. And it can also help, I've touched on this a little bit, with, like, circular economic principles, so overall, like, bumping up that global economy. There are actually some specific examples that the article was describing that could, you know, boost the global economy. One of them was water filtration systems that mimicked plant roots and cohesive water concepts, and then also nano generators that convert mechanical energy into electricity efficiently. When I searched up what exactly a nano generator was, I was, like, shocked, because it consumes, like, all this, like, mechanical energy, but it's a very tiny device, so it's saving lots of materials, but it's still producing lots of energy. It was stuff like that. And actually, those nano generators, those were mainly inspired by, like, fish scales that could generate electrical energy, or, like, hummingbird wings. So it was stuff like that that really aligns with concepts of biomimicry.
Yeah, and there's also the thing about, like, artificial intelligence, because, like, we talk about that almost every episode at this point, because it's, like, interconnected with a lot of STEM topics, and even humanities, so, but AI and biomimicry really aren't that different, because they're, like, they're taking past experiences and, like, models to solve problems in the most efficient way they can come up with at that point. So, like, generative AI can utilize its, like, wide range of information access to help us answer questions. And the thing that differs between biomimicry and AI is that biomimicry has ethos, and could you like elaborate more on that?
Yeah, so I think one of the things about biomimicry and AI that are like in common, as Mehal was touching on, is that they like find ways to like pluck information from other sources to help us become better, like more technologically advanced. But by saying like biomimicry as ethos, there's almost like there's an incorporation of like the ideas of having like empathy when you're also considering like creating advancements for humankind. Actually, one of the like main mottos for our school, Phillips Exeter Academy, is like knowledge without goodness is very dangerous. So it's important to have knowledge and goodness when you're trying to help the world. And I feel like biomimicry has more incorporation with that because it's, you know, it's involving very natural elements.
Yeah. All right, so
there is one more thing pertaining to biomimicry and AI that I was sort of interested in, because there have been some research about how like biomimicry and AI can combine to solve problems, and a lot of research has been done to sort of see if biomimicry and AI together can sort of do better than the two alone. Do you want to elaborate that on that, Mehal?
Like, what is your question here?
there's just been some research on biomimicry and AI that I thought was very interesting.
Oh yeah, no, there's... yeah, so I'm not really sure. Like, I feel like the main thing with that is that they can kind of like intersect to benefit us in general. And neural networks and deep learning, like AI concepts, are usually based on our brain. And our brain is actually really interesting because we see like a lot of things like neural networks and stuff, which are keywords that are always repeated when talking about artificial intelligence. And basically the premise behind that is that they're like, the artificial intelligence is like copying almost the way our brains function, which is actually really interesting because like that could kind of draw parallels between artificial intelligence like becoming more and more human-like. I'm going off on a tangent, but essentially like also emulates the process of like natural selection with like its optimizing algorithms to make its responses and inputs more accurate. And especially with like LLMs, they have to make sure that they're not just like spouting random information. So it like kind of has to go through almost a checker to make sure that like the responses even remotely make sense. So yeah.
Yeah. And I'd say that, you know, like by including processes of like neural networks and evolution, AI is definitely like much more useful for not only like students, but also, you know, people in the workplace or, you know, really anyone who's like into education or like STEM subjects, even humanities subjects. It's really touched all aspects of our life. So that's essentially the gist of what exactly biomimicry is about. We know that this was a slightly short episode, but we hope that you guys have gotten a little bit out of, you know, these really cool advancements. And yeah, I'm not entirely sure what the next episode is going to be about, but we're hoping to include another guest from Exeter, because we know that, you know, obviously I love going solo with Mehal, but including some guests.
I know, I'm amazing.
Huh?
I know I'm amazing, but like, you don't need to tell me.
And we also think that including some guests can always be fun. We might even include teachers from our school as guests, but we're still thinking about it. We have two more episodes for this specific
season. Yeah.
We're just going to call this our pilot season. Another thing that I was hoping is that we can include specific topics, like specific scientific topics, and we could do a whole season about that. But enough of me yapping. I hope you learned a little bit about biomimicry. Watch that TED Talk because I think it deserves more recognition. You're listening to WPEA 90.5 FM Exeter.
See you next time.